Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to season two of the 147 podcast with me, Sports MC Phil Seymour, and him, the reigning Players and Tour champion and former champion of the world, the magician, Sean Murphy. And we are in Nuremberg ahead of the... Well, no, we're not in Nuremberg, are we? I'm not in Nuremberg. I'm in Colchester, of all the weird and wonderful places. But you, Sean Murphy, are in Nuremberg.
Greetings to you from Germany, everybody. Having said that, if you looked out my window or walked out into the streets with your eyes closed, you could be forgiven for thinking I'd accidentally landed in Dubai.
Is it really that hot over there?
Or the surface of the sun, one of the other. It is ridiculously warm here. 34 degrees today.
Love people pay good money to go on holidays places as hot as that.
It is stunning, particularly after the summer we've had in the UK and Ireland. I mean, it is unbelievably warm.
Lovely. Very nice. And what's Nuremberg like? Never been.
Really nice. I mean, I've only spent a little bit of time here over the years when we were here for the Paul Hunter Classic in Firth, which is the next town down the motorway. We'd pop into Nuremberg come to one of the Irish bars or something like that. But it's a really good city, you know, really, really good. There's lots of culture here. There's lots of history here. I've been to see the venue today. I had a practice session at the Kia Metropole Arena. It is first class. I'm really looking forward to getting stuck into the tournament.
I love that. There's lots of culture, lots of history, and Irish bars. So you've got something to do then, Sean. That's good.
Yeah, of course. In Ireland, we just call them bars.
Well, yeah, you would do.
They're Irish bars.
Irish bars. Fantastic, great stuff. Well, I'm still in the UK. I don't get these fancy trips abroad like Sean does. Although he's working, allegedly, if you can call it that. And we will come on to the European Masters very shortly because it begins tomorrow. We're recording this on Monday evening. It does begin tomorrow on Tuesday. Runs through until Sunday over there in Nuremberg. Before we get into our preview of it, though, Sean. Change your opponent. You were meant to be facing Graham Dott. What's happened?
Yeah, I got the call this morning from World Snooker just to say that for personal reasons, he's had to withdraw from the tournament. So I hope he's well. Graham, I don't know if you're listening, but I hope you're well. I hope everything's okay. And he's been replaced in the draw by Stephen Holworth. And I think this is where one of those small little idiosyncrasies comes into it, because this is a held over first round match. For us, the tournament's deemed not to have started, and so a replacement is found. Whereas I think if this had happened, if we'd both played a match and we'd got this far and then he couldn't make it, I think I'd just get a bye.
Yeah, you get a bye because they can't replace someone that's already knocked someone out, can they? I think that's how it works. So
something like that. Of course, there's another player as well, a young Chinese player who qualified He won a match already and then hasn't been able to get here with visa issues. And I have to say, it's weird, isn't it? I think it's still quite weird how in 2023, these visas and having the right piece of paper stops you going in and out of countries. I get that we need to keep track of who enters what. Although, without getting into the politics of it too much, like, I'm not 100% sure why. I don't really get it, you know. But it's strange that the young player not being able to get the correct visa. So, and I don't know what issues he's had with the visa. Has denied him access to the event, and that's a real shame.
Yeah, he's actually won a match to get there as well, hasn't he? He won the first round match in the UK. For those people that don't know, we do have people that aren't snooker fans that listen to podcasts. So what happens is the first round, or is it first round or qualifying?
It's called both. Technically, it's the first round.
We'll call it qualifying. That takes place in the UK to save everyone from having to travel over to Nuremberg. But they hold back the top-seeded players and they play their first round or qualifying match actually in Nuremberg. That way, it makes sense, really. That way, the German snooker fans over there in Nuremberg, they are guaranteed to see... Is it the top 16 that get held over?
Yeah.
So they're guaranteed to see the top 16 players over there playing in Nuremberg. Everyone else plays their qualifier or first round match here. Those that win then go play their next match over in Nuremberg. So Sean's match, which was meant to be against Graham Dott, has been held over. So that wasn't played here. That's being played in Nuremberg. But Graham's now out. Graham, yeah, just to echo what Sean said, lovely bloke, Graham Dott. Very, very popular. Really hope you're all right, Graham. I know he's had some well-publicised problems over the years. So really hope Graham's okay. Stephen Haworth comes in. But this young Chinese player, poor lad, he's won the match to get there. He's won the qualifier or the first round match to get over to Nuremberg. And now visa issues. Now, we know Hussein Vafai, he's suffered loads with visa issues over the years, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. And I have to say, it's a real shame. I mean, I'm just reading it here. Liu Honghu has pulled out the Betvicta European Masters in Germany due to visa issues, while Graham Dott has also withdrawn to personal reasons. I think it's a real shame. And as I say, these things affect, you know, a global sport like snooker. And listen, it's affecting everyone. You can't just travel around the world freely. I do get that. So don't be sending in messages telling me I don't know the way. You know, I do understand it. And obviously, like with the influx of Brexit now, you know, even just coming here yesterday, you know, I got asked a few more questions at passport control in Nuremberg than I would have been asked before. You know, why are you here? How long are you going to be here?
Ah, you Mr. Tumble.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, who's recording Mr. Tumble whilst you're here? You know, you're seeing the effects of these things now. But for Liu, I just think it's a real shame. And I don't know how we get around it. I'm, as we speak, in the middle of my own problems with a visa application to try to get to Shanghai in a couple of weeks. You know, that whole process. And for people out there listening who either haven't done it or wonder how these things work on the tour, you know, we do all of this stuff ourselves. World Snooker Tour provide us what they call invitation letters that we give to the Chinese embassy to obtain one of these visas. I can't go on a tourist visa, which is easier to obtain. It's not still not easy, but it's easier. I have to go on a business visa. And that now entails, it didn't used to entail, but it now means I've got to go to London. When I get back from this tournament, I've got to go to London and physically attend a meeting and subject myself to a biometric scan. They've got to take fingerprints and all sorts.
Even though you've been there so many times, they've still got to do all that.
Still, I mean, I've got, now this has obviously all come about in the pandemic era, but I've got a new passport now, which has no visas in it. But my previous passport must have 20 Chinese visas in it.
Yeah.
So even though you've got that track record, and I'm sure the Ministry of Sport over there could vouch for what we're doing there, it is a real minefield. And I've got to, just to give an idea into a window into my world at the moment, I've got to get back from here in Nuremberg. Depending on how long I go here, I've either got to go back to Dublin and then to London, or straight to London from here, that's fine. I've got the meeting next week to submit and give my passport in for the visa. That takes 4 days. And then how do I get back to the Republic of Ireland without a passport?
That's a fair point, actually. So they actually have to take your passport for 4 days?
Used to be able to get a same-day service 3, 4, 5 years ago. Same-day service when I used to live in Manchester all those years ago. Now it's a four-day thing. A couple of airlines I can fly in and out of the Republic without a passport. You just need a driver's license. But then it starts getting a bit complicated. And, of course, all of this is going on whilst we're trying to think about a tournament and play snooker and everything else that goes along with it. So it's a bit of a thingy. Anyway, back to the point.
Eventually.
I do think it's a real shame that these issues and these little bits of paper caused so much trouble for, you know, as you said, Hussein Bafai had a, you know, it dogged his career.
It really has, yeah.
Who knows where he could have gone with you know, less problems over the years with travel issues. We're so lucky. You forget how lucky we are to carry a, you know, a British or an Irish, but you forget how lucky you are.
Absolutely, you do. Now, on the subject of China, you're going to be going back there again as well. They've announced the World Open is to return, and that's going to happen again in China. So you've got the Shanghai Masters, you've got the Wuhan Open, the International Championship, and now the World Open, which will be in Yushan in March, 11th to 17th of March. Yes, I know it means that you're going over there again, but... Oh, sorry, I've got some funny noises in my ears there. I don't know quite what happened, but there you go. You're going to be over there again in March, which is great news for snooker, isn't it?
Absolutely fantastic news. It's great news, and it just, you know, it shows that snooker is on its way back following the pandemic. You know, I think the pandemic really affected our game possibly more than any other sport in the world, really, you know. And it's great to see that it's taken a while, and we were told that these events were coming back, but they are now back. And I'm very relieved that we've got these events back on the calendar. WST have taken a lot of criticism in recent months for a fairly sparse calendar when we compare it to the glory days of maybe 6 or 7 years ago. But I think with the reintroduction of these events, the calendar starts to look, well, certainly in a lot better shape.
Yeah, I think it's looking healthy if you look at it, really. Yeah, all right, we've had a big gap. We have had a big gap, and I know that. I appreciate that. But we've also had the pandemic. And no China at all, and it is starting to come back. And I know Jason Ferguson, right the way through, the chairman, he's gone on about, you know, it's coming back, it's going to come back, it's going to come back, and he's true to his word. It is, and the World Open is another step in that. So, yeah, hats off to him. I think it's fantastic. We're going to have a catch up on the last couple of weeks. Just before we do, thank you everyone for the feedback on the last podcast. We had Rick Witter from Shed 7 on as our first sort of snooker fan guest, and he had a good time. He's been messaging me saying that he wants to come meet up with you in York, have a frame, have a few beers, and he will, by the way. That is an absolute goer, is that one? That is going to happen. So let's look at the last couple of weeks. Yes, thank you to everyone for the good feedback. It is appreciated. We will have some more guests coming on in the not too distant future, but more of that at a future date. There's been the British Open qualifying going on. That was that in Leicester?
I think it was Sheffield, actually.
Was it Sheffield?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Which, funnily enough...
You could be fooled into thinking the entire snooker tour had moved to Leicester.
I was at the EIS yesterday, and it's quite weird. That room at the English Institute of Sport in Sheffield, where they have the snook, they have qualifiers there, Q School's there as well, isn't it? They have it all there. I've been there when the snooker's on. I was there yesterday for the Wheelchair Rugby League Challenge Cup Final and Challenge Trophy Final, which, by the way... It's still available on the BBC Sport website. If you've never watched Wheelchair Rugby League, watch it. It is completely and utterly fascinating. The athleticism that those guys have got and the action is ridiculous what they can do. You've got people knocking each other all over the place in wheelchairs. Crazy sport. Wheelchair Rugby League. Check it out on BBC Sport. I was there yesterday for that. I've also been in that same hall for boxing, for the Team GB amateur boxing as well. And it's just so weird when you walk in there. And the last time I was there were snooker tables. This time, there's an indoor rugby league pitch. Very, very strange. But yeah, British Open qualifying. So I've picked out a few of the results. I'm not going to go through them all because there's dozens of them. Stephen Hendry lost 4-2 to Mohamed Asif. I've seen a few people saying that Hendry should turn it in. What do you think, Sean?
Yeah, I do understand why people are saying that, but I did an article last week with Neil Goulden, which was syndicated around the country, and the thrust of that article was, you know, I think when you've achieved what Stephen Hendry's achieved, I think you have the right to play anywhere you want, anytime you want. He owes nobody. He doesn't owe anyone anything in snooker. And I think as long as WST are going to give him this tour card, a wild card tour card onto the tour, he can pick and choose, play whenever he wants. I think if Stephen Hendry hasn't earned the right to play when he wants, then something's wrong.
I agree 100% with that as well. And I've got to say, his Q-Tips channel is brilliant. Absolute. I know you've been on there. He's got the Belgian Bullet, who we're going to talk about in a minute, Luca Brissell. He's on there this week. Really great content. Really, really good. So what do you think? Should Hendry carry on or shouldn't he? But I know a few people have been calling for it, so I asked the question. Ben Mertens, a player we've talked about quite a lot on this podcast. He beat Louis Heathcote 4-2. That's a great result for Ben Mertens, isn't it?
Yeah, very, very good. I think Ben Mertens, you know, at some stage soon, will have to put the foot down and start churning out some results, because you come on tour as a young player with a lot of, potential. Eventually that potential runs away with yourself and you don't fulfil it. So at some stage, you know, you will have to start churning in some results, and that's a really good result. That 4-2 win over Louis Heathcote was a really, really good win. Talking of good wins, and particularly on the form he's shown the last couple of seasons, which hasn't been great, Stephen Maguire churned out a very good performance to beat Jimmy White 4-0.
He did. Now, you tipped
very well in that match.
In our season preview, you tipped Mags as a player to watch this season. You said on that he'll turn it round, he will come back, he's too good not to. And that's a good win, because Jimmy's been playing well as well.
It's almost, now you've got to say this quietly, you've got to whisper this because people don't like it, but it's almost as if I know what I'm talking about, isn't it?
Yeah, you still shouldn't commentate when you're in tournaments, though, Sean, should you?
No,
anyway,
fair enough.
And a player I tipped on that same... You can't see the face Sean's just pulled, but I can. You also can't see that, and that's not nice, Mr. Murphy. Oh, dear me. It's a good job it's an audio service. A player I tipped up on our season preview was Chris Wakelin. And he had a real battle playing Andrew Padgett, 3-0 down, and he came back and won 4-3. Now, I've seen Chris interviewed. He's admitted it in interview, and I think it's right. That's confidence. That's confidence, and something that he has really gained or developed, or however you want to put it. I think 2 years ago, he loses that match. He's 3-0 down. I think he loses that. He's dead and buried, and he's gone. But 3-0 down, he is the reigning shootout champion. That gives him confidence. And his other performances have been good since then as well. Beats Andrew Padgett 4-3. Hell of a performance, that.
Hell of a performance, absolutely, as you say. I think this shows the difference that having that confidence of being a winner can give you. You know, he now knows how to win, and he now knows what he can do it when the pressure comes on. So at 3-0 behind, he's not the same Chris Wakelin that he was a few seasons ago. Digs in, takes it one ball, one frame at a time. What I can do is give you an update from the tour. You know, Chris Wakelin, one to watch this season, as we've said a few times, really nice guy, friend of the podcast. However...
Oh, this sounds intriguing.
Based on today and the evidence I saw in the practice room, has the worst taste in flip-flops.
Go on. You've got to tell. You've got to broaden that one out. What's wrong with these flip-flops?
I mean, everything.
For a start, everything. I know it's hot over there, but he's practicing in flip-flops. Is that right?
Practicing in flip-flops. Joe Davis is currently spinning in his grave.
Chris Wakelin, you're going to have to come on the pod at some point and answer this. What's wrong with him? What's wrong with his flip-flops?
I think it's just flip-flops in general. I think they were just, you know, yeah, they're just not, you know, we need a nice pair. You know, he's a winner now. He needs to treat himself to a nice pair of flip-flops.
Well, let's hope he has actually brought his shoes and he isn't going out into the, whatever it's called, the Kia Arena, whatever it is, wearing his flip-flops when he plays in the first round, because that would be an absolute shocker. Chris Wakelin, what's wrong with your flip-flops? Moving on then, the last couple of weeks, we've already mentioned Luca Brissell. He is on Stephen Hendry Q-Tips YouTube channel this week, which is brilliant. He's also done an interview for World Snooker Tour with Polly James. Now, Polly James, she's a reporter on The Dart. She's also a presenter on Radio X. Really, really great presenter is Polly. Have you watched that interview, Sean? It's very, very good.
I haven't seen it. No, I saw snippets of it. They released like a little preview piece of it first, which I saw. And then just what with traveling here yesterday and stuff, I haven't seen it yet. But great. I mean, it's just, you know, it's great to, you know, to see the tour catching up with him. Of course, we've been running our, you know, Luca watch throughout the summer.
Yeah. And we've followed him all around the globe, haven't we?
there are rumours coming out of ITV, actually, that they're going to bring back that old show, Wish You Were Here, with Judith Chalmers, but they're going to call it Wish You Were Luca.
That's one for the kids. He is snookers Alan Wicker. There you go.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Yeah, so that's a great one. Get onto the WST social media and YouTube channel. Really, really great interview. And of course, he's flashing the car on there. If you've got a red Ferrari, you're going to get it in the interview, aren't you, Sean?
Absolutely you are. Yeah, absolutely. I think he might be driving to Nuremberg as we speak. There was a couple of clues on his Instagram. I'm just looking forward to seeing the car, to be completely honest.
Of course you are. Yeah, it goes without saying, doesn't
it? I've seen Luca since he was a young boy playing snooker. I've seen enough of Luca. I just want to see the car.
Now, we've been following Luca all around the globe during the summer since he won the World Championship, and he has literally been all around the globe as well. Luca is back. He's heading to Nuremberg. However, I was reading Phil Hague in the Metro. Luca's queue is still on holiday. Have you seen this?
Saw that.
He's lost.
Has he not got it back yet?
He's lost his World Championship winning queue. He hadn't as of yesterday. And he says he's got another queue, but his other queue's rubbish. I think, I'm paraphrasing. Yeah, I don't think he said it was rubbish, but he said it's no good. An airline has managed to lose his World Championship winning queue. Have a look on eBay, people. It could well be on there, but that's bad, isn't it?
That's bad. That is bad. In all seriousness, like, I mean, they talk about the queue being an extension of a player's arm, and it just isn't as simple. You know, a golfer on tour breaks or loses a club. They go to the driving range at the tournament. They get the guys in the truck to make them a new thing, or a tennis player gets a new racket sent. Because the queue is wooden, and it has those natural characteristics that all the cues are different. Picking one up and moving to another one is just so, so difficult. Unless you're practicing regularly with both, it's the worst possible outcome for a snooker player. So I hope that his cue has been reunited with him, and I hope he gets it back, because there's been a few players over the career who have lost their cues, and their careers were never the same. You know, Stephen Hendry does spring to mind. Well, he had his cue that he won all those championships with snapped and broken. He was never the same.
It was bent like a banana by the end, wasn't it? I mean, his cue was it was curled. I mean, it was properly bendy by the end. But like you said, that was what he played with. It was what he knew. It was what he was used to. And when that goes, that goes, and that's really bad news. So yeah, fingers crossed, Luca has got his cue back. Listening to Dave Hendon on the Snooker Scene podcast this week, he was talking about the World Championships and it possibly moving to the Middle East. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I thought that was very interesting, that piece. I listened to that very, very carefully because, you know, the general sort of take on that has been one of, you know, positivity and commitment to the Crucible. And it was just listening to Dave, having been down to Maskells to talk to Barry, I think, about something else. It was very interesting to sense that perhaps that tide might be turning as the 10-year deal with Sheffield, you know, approaches going again. You know, that it's coming to an end. It's not at an end yet, but it, you know, the end is in sight. And you know what? I think with a commercial hat on, I understand it.
Yeah, I do.
It's our biggest event in our smallest arena. Those two things don't go together. Snooker brings so much money through the Sheffield's front door every year, have been synonymous with snooker for more than 40 years now. I think Barry wants them to build a new arena. I get it.
There's a lot of arguments.
My heart, on the other hand, wants it to stay in Sheffield. But, you know, as we've seen, money makes the world go round, doesn't it?
There's an awful lot of strong arguments for and against. An awful lot of strong arguments. And even if you take the Middle East out of it, some people have an issue with the Middle East and sports washing or whatever. Some people have issues with that, okay? Take that out of it and say Sydney, Australia wanted the World Championship to be there 1 year. Say New York wanted it to be there 1 year. Say Paris wanted it. Say Bruges, Belgium, Brussels wanted it. Say Berlin wanted it. Take the Middle East bit out of the equation. Why do those countries not deserve the World Championship every now and then? I'm with you. My heart says Sheffield. My heart says Sheffield and the Crucible. But my head actually says, well, there's really good arguments for moving it around. And if you listen to the Snook Scene podcast, Dave Hendon, I mean, he's sat in a dark room rocking as he's talking about it half the time, I think. But he gets the point across really, really well.
Yeah,
and I've got to agree with what he said. There does seem to be a shift in thinking, because 5 years ago, I think it was 5 years ago when they announced the deal with Sheffield, it's firmly staying in Sheffield, it's in place, it's not going anywhere. Now, there is a thinking that, actually, maybe it could. So, watch this space. You know, it's certainly changed, down people they? Above
you know,
our pay grade.
Talk about sporting events that are in situ. You know, let's look at Wimbledon for a minute. You know, the courts at Wimbledon, you know, are almost unrecognisable to the ones they were 30, 40 years ago.
Yeah,
the Crucible has hardly changed. It did have a revamp 10 or 15 years ago with a few quid spent backstage. But in, you know, general terms, it hasn't changed at all, really. It's the same size, perhaps a few seats bigger. You know, take Wimbledon. You know, all the courts, they didn't even exist. Centre Court was there. It's now got a roof, as is number one court. There's loads of court. They're all great for being televised and all the rest of it. Wembley's not even in the same place as it used to be. It's not even on the same piece of ground. It was turned around into a different direction. That's completely changed. Is our World Championship, and here's a question, this is, you know, open, guys, get involved with this. Is our World Championship the only World Championship in sport that doesn't move?
Well, that's a very good question, actually. At 147 Pod, do you know the answer to that? I'm trying to think of other World Championships. Obviously, FIFA World Cup moves around. The Olympics moves around. Athletics World Championships, which is on at the moment, that moves around. I went to it when it was in London. It's in Budapest at the moment, in Hungary.
The biggest golf event in the world is the Open Championship.
Yep, that
and
moves that, around.
And that's at a different venue every year. It's on a roster. There's a roster of courses that it attends. And I think every 5 years it checks in at St Andrews. And the next 4 years it goes off somewhere else.
Yeah.
And this isn't a loaded question. I don't know the answer to this. But is our World Snooker Championship the only World Championship that doesn't move around the world? It'd be interesting to get the... And don't come on to me, guys. Don't come on to me with the World Series. Because we all know that stays in the state. But we all know why it's called the World Series.
Yeah, but just a second. Even that moves around the states. Like the Super Bowl moves around the states as well. That's not in one place every time.
No. And it's not a World Championship. So don't do it. No, well,
I've got to flag this then. The World Series is called the World Series because it was originally sponsored by a publication called The World. It's not the World Series. It's
Correct.
The series of baseball. Anyway, let us know at 147 Pod. What do you think? Should it or could it move to the Middle East or elsewhere? Who knows? At 147 Pod, that's all words, 147 Pod, all over social media. Let us know what you think. Now, you've been on a podcast, Sean, this last week, and not this one. You've basically been cheating on me with another podcast. Disgraceful. You've been on the How Do You Cope podcast with Ellis James and John Robbins. Now, before we talk about it, I've got an issue with those two, and I'll tell you why. You don't know this, do you? You're looking at me baffled. I used to be a big fan of theirs, okay? They're, for a start, very funny comedians. Both very funny comedians. Used to do a show on Radio X. There's a lot of Radio X in this today with Polly James as well. And I used to love their show on Radio X until I tuned in when we were in Llandudno for the Tour Championship 1 year. And I heard John Robbins and Ellis James talking about the fact they'd been watching the snooker all week on ITV. And that Ellis James was absolutely beside himself with fury at the way the announcer pronounced Llandudno. Basically saying that I pronounced it wrong. This is me, by the way, who takes great pride in actually speaking, welcoming the crowd in Welsh. Whenever we go to Wales, I'll always say good afternoon, good morning, good evening in Welsh. I'll always welcome them. And yet, he ripped me on national radio. And do you know what? He's no idea, because he doesn't know idea who I am. But I know who he is.
Isn't Ellis Welsh?
Yes, he is Welsh, yeah.
But is there a chance he knows better than you?
No, absolutely not. How dare he insult my Welsh pronunciation on the radio? I'm furious. And Ellis James,
I feel as a Welshman, he might know.
Ellis James, if you've got an issue with my Welsh pronunciation, come on the podcast and teach me how to speak Welsh. Quite simple, okay? Quite simple. Come on the pod, teach me how to speak Welsh. Anyway, that aside, their podcast is called How Do You Cope? And it's a great podcast. John Robbins, he's come out in the past and admitted he's had a few issues with alcohol and stress and different things. And it's a podcast about mental health, I think specifically men's mental health podcast. And I thought you spoke really honestly on there, Sean.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, well, it was funny because I listened to quite a few episodes in the build-up to going on the podcast. And, you know, just to make sure I got a sense of the type of tone and, as you say, where they go with the chat. And even with that, I wasn't really ready or prepared for the deep dive that we ended up on. You know, it was a real look into some quite sensitive areas of my life that, you know, I'm happy to talk to. But I'm talking about, sorry, but... yeah, it was good, and in one way, it was actually really good to get stuff like that out. There was a few topics we covered that I don't think I'd ever really spoke about publicly, or certainly not as in depth. And it was quite cathartic. And you know what? And this is always the way, I think, when you speak out about sensitive matters, there's so many people out there who get in touch and say that resonated with me. Thank you for talking. My inbox across social media has been full with people getting in touch saying, thank you for talking openly about that. I've suffered with that, or A, B, and C, or something related to it. And to hear you talking so honestly and openly about it has really, you know, made me feel a little bit better about it myself. So just for that, it was worth going on. They were great guys. It was a great pod to be on. And I enjoyed it.
Good stuff. It's like Mark Selby said, you know, if him admitting his problems helps one person, then fantastic. You know, it's been great. The same with that. I'm sure there will have been people listening to that. What I would say, have a listen to it. You know, it's everywhere on social media. It's all over wherever you get your podcasts. It's, I think, How Do You Cope, isn't it? That was what it's called, with Ellis James and John Robbins. Have a listen to it. If you're one of these people that abuses people on social media or gets into snooker players' inboxes when they lose a match that you don't think they should lose, or you've lost your 50 pence that you had bet on them, just listen to that podcast, because you might change your thinking slightly. All kinds of topics covered on there. It's a really good listen. So that's a How Do You Cope podcast. I'm plugging everyone else's podcast this week, John. What's going on with me? What is up with
me? What are you doing?
I've got absolutely no idea, but let's focus on our own. We're going to take a couple of minutes break, and then we will be back with our preview of the European Masters.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to the 147 podcast with Sean Murphy and Phil Seymour. If you like what you're listening to, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and be sure to interact with us across all forms of social media at 147pod. That's the words, at 147pod. Yes, it is. And do, because we love it when people get involved on social media. We've got some listener questions coming up later on. One of them that we can sort of relate to the World Championships possibly moving, but we'll come to that later on. First of all, as we said before, Sean is in sunny Nuremberg for the European Masters. It begins tomorrow. If you're listening to this the night it comes out, on Tuesday the 22nd, runs through until Sunday the 27th. It must be great to have that over there in Germany. And it's a bit normality, isn't it, for you, Sean?
It's great to get back on the bike, yeah. And it's been a long summer off. We have the Championship League. The kind of season has, for me anyway, feels like it's stuttered to a bit of a start. But to be honest with you, you know, once it gets rolling, once we go from here to Shanghai, then we come back, it's then thick and fast until Christmas. So I've enjoyed the time off, but now it's time to go back to work. And I'm excited to be back here. I have to say, every time I come back to this part of the world, though, I am reminded that for many, many years we came here in honour of Paul Hunter. We had the Paul Hunter Classic in Firth up the road, and I think it's remiss to have this event so close and past without mentioning Paul. You know, Paul and Matthew, Ian McCulloch and a few others were very, very influential in the very early days of the explosion of snooker in Germany and across Europe. It was those players with the Dragon Stars group, with Thomas Cecil running that, and my former friend and former WST director Brandon Parker at the helm of that explosion in Europe. The Paul Hunter Classic was a phenomenal event that we all used to come, and we might have had a couple of drinks too many every now and again. There was a party on the Saturday, and just honouring Paul, really. It was a great week to snooker, and that had really did lead the way for the PTC and European Tour Series, and now we're in the European Masters in the city next door. We owe so much to those guys that have been before us.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we're reaping the benefits of their hard work now.
Certainly are. It's fantastic. And it's great that it's there. Of course, I was on the mic when it was in Milton Keynes, and it was won by Fan Zhengzhi, beat Ronnie O'Sullivan in the final. It seems crazy that back in those weird days. Anyway, we've already mentioned that some of the first round of qualifying games are held over to the main arena over there in Nuremberg. I've picked out a couple of those for us to talk about. Judd Trump against Mohamed Ibrahim. You would think that Judd will breeze through that one, wouldn't you, really?
You would think so. You know, on paper, he's obviously the overwhelming favourite for it. I was actually on the practice table this afternoon on the session after him and watched him practice for 20 minutes or so, waiting for him to finish. He didn't miss one ball.
Wow.
So early ominous signs. But, you know, we've seen surprises before. And if the top players are susceptible to a surprise loss, it's usually early on. But yeah, you would think Judd would be heavy favourite there. Mark Allen is another one you picked out against Anton Kazakov.
Yeah, last year's player of the season, Mark Allen. Again, you would think Mark would, but we've not really seen a lot of him, so we don't know. Have you seen anything of Mark?
I haven't. I know he was away at the weekend with some on a bit of an exhibition tour. He followed me, actually. I was on the Isle of Man a couple of months ago, and he was back at the same club doing an exhibition there. Had similar problems that I had getting to the Isle of Man. Ridiculous.
It's a nightmare.
Bearing in mind, it's just there. It's only over there. It's not far away. He had similar problems. So he was over there. Easier travel problems to get here. Luca Brasel against Jackson Page. I saw Jackson wandering around the venue earlier on. He'd been here practicing. No sign of Luca yet. Although, as I say, I think he is breaking the land speed record in the Ferrari on his way here now.
That's a banana skin, that.
That is a potential banana
Jackson
skin. Jackson
Page,
yeah,
is a banana skin waiting to happen. If Luca is coming in undercooked, if Luca hasn't got his cue back, Jackson Page is a potential banana skin, because an informed Jackson Page can take a player out. Good player.
Be quite interesting that, because although it's like a million years ago, when I won the World Championship, you kind of, not under pressure, but you feel like you want to be a good representative. So you do go to this function and that opening and that club and that exhibition. Of course, Luca's had an amazing few months travelling the world. And as world champion, he's completely entitled to do all of that. But there'll be that the other side of that line is you want to come out and make a really good impression. And I'm sure that whilst Instagram and social media is full of traveling and holidays and this, that, and the other, I'm sure that he will have spent some time preparing, even with his queue troubles. I'm sure he won't come here. I'll be very surprised if he comes here, let me put it this way, having not played at all. Because, as you say, Jackson Page, on the right day, could put him to bed.
Yeah, absolutely, he could. Now, we've talked about your game against Graham Dotton. Sadly, Graham can't be there, so you've got Stephen Hallworth now. He's taken his place. Ronnie O'Sullivan's got Andy Hicks. Goodness me, they've both been on the tour for a long time. Neil Robertson, now this is an interesting one. Neil had a tricky season last year. He's got Wu Yizhe in the first round. Wu Yizhe is another potential banana skin. I saw Neil on social media. Did you see this? He got his picture with John Paris of Paris Qs last week.
Which, no, I didn't see that.
It's a known thing. If you're not a snooker fan, I'll Paris Qs. John makes the Qs for, I think, most of the players on the tour, certainly most of the top players. And when, there's a running thing on social media that whenever a player wins a tournament, within about half a second, Paris Qs tweet a picture of John Paris with that player, with their cue. Congratulations to X player. Just once, we're using his Paris cue. And he's got the updated picture. And it's almost like Neil's gone to get a picture with John as kind of a good omen. So John's got a recent picture for when he wins an event.
Well, it's very interesting you should say that, because that's the type of thinking, that's the type of mental, training that Chris Henry would recommend. And there's a very strong rumour going around the tour that Chris Henry and Neil Robertson have teamed up.
Oh, that and is interesting.
If that's true, you could see some sparks from Robbo.
Wow. But doesn't it take a while to bed in when you get a new coach like that?
I mean, yes is the answer, absolutely. I mean, it takes a long time to override any habits. But, I mean, this is a player whose habits have been pretty good.
If you're starting from Neil Robertson's level, it's like, well, that could be quite scary.
We're splitting hairs, somebody of Neil Robertson's class, if it's true that he's teamed up with Chris Henry, that could be a formidable pairing. Chris, starts to look like he's got a good stable of players now, working with a lot of good players. Love to be Chris Henry's bank manager.
That's some rumor that, if true, that's there you go. That could be a 147 podcast exclusive. Is Neil Robertson now being coached by Chris Henry? Interesting times. Okay, let's move on then. So they were some of the games that have been held over. Then we've got some of the first round games or second round games, however you look at it. Mark Williams, Matthew Stevens, an all Welsh clash over there. Mark Williams, of course, fresh from Championship League final action against yourself. Matthew's always tough, though, isn't he?
Oh, I mean, just one of the best players that the game's ever produced. I think he's almost not the forgotten man, but I think that gets forgotten how just how good Matthew was.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it still is in there. You know, he can still play. I remember when I first joined the junior circuit as a 8, 9, 10-year-old, he was those few years above me, maybe, I'm not sure of his age, but maybe 4 or 5 years older than me. And he was just about to skip off into the pro ranks. And he was phenomenal. And let's not forget, he twice a world finalist, won the UK championship. Just a proper player.
You mentioned Paul Hunter before. Obviously, you're over there in Nuremberg, which is just by way where the Portland's Classic was. How much did Paul's death affect Matthew, do you think? Because they were really tight. I mean, they were really good friends, weren't they?
Yeah. I mean, we all talk about having mates on the tour, and like we've all got mates who we'd prefer to go for a beer with or a drink with or whatever. These two were like boyhood best friends.
Yeah.
And their lives were interwoven in a way that, you have people like that in your life very rarely, real tight friends. And I think it affected him. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but, I think it affected him as it would affect anyone losing a best mate, a proper, true, close best friend. I don't think there's any question that it affected, his whole life. And, of course, that then in turn affects his career. And Matthew, of course, as well. He lost his father very early on in his life. Morell Stevens was a wonderful man. I remember him. I remember him on the junior circuit and the early amateur days. You know, Morell was a wonderful man. And so Matthew's been through it, you know.
Yeah, certainly has. So anyway, that's Matt Williams. Matthew, that could be a great game, that, actually. It's an all-Welsh class in Nuremberg. Could be a great game. Ben Mertens, we've already mentioned, he plays Sanderson Lamb. CJ Hui, your old mate, plays Ken Doherty. Can C carry on that form of last season that he had in Sheffield and bring that through into this? I think he will, to be honest. But he's playing Ken. Chris Wakelin, who we've already mentioned, he's got another tough one, Aaron Hill. Now, Aaron Hill, another player, as you said about Ben Mertens, who needs to kick on now, doesn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. And we shared the flight over, actually. We were on the same plane coming over. Aaron was telling me he's been working hard on his game. He's in good form, feeling good about things. Chris is obviously, you know, in good form, and he's just got that win over Padgett there a few weeks ago from 3-0 behind. So that could be a really good game. But probably more important for Aaron Hill than Chris Wakelin. Yeah, because Aaron, you know, you always get asked when you're in Ireland, you know, who's the next big thing? Who's the next big player coming? Obviously, they've got, you know, great pedigrees. Go with your Fergal O'Briens and with your Ken Doherty's. And, of course, my PA, Robbie, you know, is probably the most highly decorated amateur player the Republic of Ireland have ever produced. Aaron Hill's like the new hope.
Yeah, yeah.
And at some stage, he'll have to start doing some damage, because I know he beat O'Sullivan in one of his first matches at Milton Keynes a few seasons ago. He hasn't done a great deal since then.
No, he needs to kick on. He's got the ability. I mean, he's got the ability. You just said he beat Ronnie O'Sullivan. He's got the ability. Of course he's got the ability. But he's going to have to start showing that now. So time for him to kick on. The last one I've picked out of the draw as well, Ashley Hugill against Ali Carter. I think that's a really decent match. Again, Ashley Hugill on his day, very, very good player. And another one of those players who he needs to start producing on the bigger stage. And you don't get much tougher a challenge than Ali Carter, do you?
Ali won't give him anything. Wouldn't give him the sweat off his nose. And I think that's a very tough match. I think it's potentially, it has got banana skin, you know, written in there somewhere. I think Ali will win. I don't think I threw him into the predictions, you know, last time round. But I think we'll see good things from Ali Carter this season, because he's too good a player to not be involved in the latter stages of most events he plays in.
Listen, Ali Carter had a good season last season, and that will continue. That will absolutely continue. So there you go. That is the European Masters. Begins tomorrow, which is Tuesday. If you're not listening to this on Monday, obviously. Runs till Sunday, live on Discovery Plus and Eurosport, I believe. I'll be watching back here in the UK. When do you play, Sean? When's your game against Stephen Haworth?
Well, as we sit here now, it's tomorrow night.
Okay, so it's Tuesday evening then. Right, I shall be watching that then. Fantastic. Right then. We shall move on. Sean, we've not had a rant for a little while, have we? Are you feeling ranty this evening?
Yeah, do you know what? I am feeling a bit ranty. I'm going to put it out there. I'm not sure I'm going to fill the 1 minute 47 seconds with this rant, because I'm going to have to protect a few identities. And I think if I could go into more detail, I could fill, you know, one day, 47 minutes. But I'm not sure I'm going to, but I'm really annoyed over a couple of things. So, yeah, I've got a rant ready.
Okay. And it's not about Chris Wakelin's flip flops.
Not anymore.
Okay, Sean, you have 1 minute and 47 seconds for your rant from the moment I say rant till the klaxon sounds. Magician, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Here we go. Sean's rant. 3, 2, 1, rant.
I'm going to put it out there straight away. This is borderline very similar to a rant I did very early on in podcast days about people who, they just have that little bit of power and they like to wield it over you. Last year, I ranted about doctors, receptionists. This time round, it's just more about those generic group of people who just have that little bit of power. Might be someone on a security desk, might be someone on a door, might be someone who runs the taxi rank, or it could be any one of these people who you You have to run into these people at some stage, and they wield that power over you like they've never been able to leave it alone in their life. They come at you and they can see that they hold the keys to your happiness over this matter, and they just will not let it go. They are the worst kind of people. I've got this power over you. I'm going to wield it. I'm not going to make your life easy. I'm not going to make the 1 minute 47 seconds. I know I'm not. But I've had it today. I walked into someone today and they just wield that little bit of power over you. And you're like, oh, really? You know, oh. And they make their point, and you just, it's so difficult to not bite and snap back at them. And you just think, yeah, I'm not really sure I should even let you wind me up like this. But it does. It has. And I'm going to need to go for a beer to get over it, frankly.
Okay, I'm klaxoning early. For a
tapping
start.
Out.
For a start.
I'm tapping out.
Feeble stamina, not lasting the 1 minute 47. Come on. Who was it? Who's been wielding power over you? Come on, Sean.
I can't tell you. Because you know them.
Oh, it's someone in the snooker world then.
Can't tell you.
Oh, wow. Okay, let's narrow this down. I couldn't do that to you, Sean. Well, you've cast a pretty wide net there, I've got to say. Do you suffer out there in podcast land? Do you suffer with these kind of people that Sean's talking about? He talked about Doctor's Receptionist last year. He's broadened it out to anybody who's got a little bit of power. And by the way, if that person does listen to this podcast, it was all Sean saying that and definitely not me. Okay. There you go. Do you agree with Sean's rant at 147pod across all forms of social media? And it was through that social media that these listener questions came into us. So we're going to ask a few of these while we've got some time. Beginning with, I'm really sorry for this pronunciation, but that is sort of typical of your question. Froschkuhl on Twitter, heading to Nuremberg. Well, be sure to see Sean there if you are. And wondered if either of you have ever learned any German, if only a few words. You go first, Sean. Have you?
Nine.
Nine words.
Do you know what? There was a time about 15 years ago where I was like, I want to go away and learn some languages. I loved languages at school and as a young person. And for a time, spoke fluent Spanish. There was a time in my life where you could have dropped me in the middle of Madrid and I would have been absolutely fine. I would have been the palest person there, but I would have been okay. And I thought, you know what? I'd love to learn German and Mandarin. They were the two I really wanted to learn, particularly with our industry and, you know, where we go. But it didn't happen.
It's hard work, isn't it? It's hard work learning languages.
It was hard work. I think it's a bit harder when you get a bit older. So I can obviously say hello and goodbye and,
one, you know, beer, please.
I feel like I can understand more than I could say.
Yeah, I get that.
What about you?
I did French at school, so I speak reasonable French. I speak enough French to get by. We did a year of German though as well, which hasn't left me with a lot. But again, like you, I think I can understand a lot more than I can speak. However, a couple of years ago, during the weird pandemic times, the German Masters took place in Milton Keynes, of course, that famous German city. And I emceed it. And for the sponsors, who I think were BetVictor, we did a quiz with the players. You might remember this, where I was asking the players, I tested them on their German. So I would say a German word and they had to give me the English. And it was things like table, cue, ball, trophy, and all these. And do you know what? I got the most wonderful help from German snooker royalty that is Rolf Kalb. Now, I spoke to Rolf on the phone and he helped me with all the pronunciations to make sure I got them spot on. And, you know, I had German people tweeting me and tweeting World Snooker, tweeting BetVictor to say that the pronunciations were spot on. At that point, I had to admit I'd had Rolf's help because he was, you know, what a lovely man as well. What a really lovely man. When I struggled to get him off the phone, actually.
The person whose name you've just absolutely butchered with that question won't be complimenting you on pronunciation.
I'll have to ring Rolf up and ask how to pronounce Froschkuhl. But yeah, so we both speak a little bit, but just a little bit.
Tiny.
As they'd say in France, un petit peu. Okay, but that's it. So yeah, just a little bit. Anyway, Sean.
Martin Yap from Twitter says, I've got a few. Sean, what are your expectations for the season? Phil, which event are you most looking forward to this season? Also, nervous chalking of the tip. Lots of players do it. What's all that about? Well, my expectations for the season, I'm really hoping to push on from, you know, a good end to last year. Obviously, the World Championships didn't go the way that I'd hoped it to at all. But, you know, picking up the last couple of events in the Players' Series, the final of the Welsh, and then starting the season with a win. You know, I'm setting my goals quite highly this year. My target is to finish the year at the end at the top of the rankings. That's my main goal for the season.
Yep, absolutely. Go on, then. Events I'm looking forward to most this season, all of them. I watch when I'm not there. I watch the snooker, so I'm going to be watching the European Masters this week. I will be the MC for the Home Nations and for the shootout this year as well down in Swansea. Really looking forward to those. Love them all, I'll be honest. Belfast for me is really special. I've got some really, really great friends over there. The atmosphere in Belfast is always brilliant. Edinburgh I loved last year as well. That was really good up there. And going over to Wales is just fantastic. I think the shootout in Swansea is going to be tremendous in December. I think that's going to be brilliant this year. So, yeah, I can't pick one out. I love them all, but Belfast for me is a little bit special. Nervous chalking of the queue, Sean. I think it's the queue stroking as well. But there is a lot of the chalking goes on. Is it just like a time thing or what?
I don't know. I think it might be construed as nervous chalking because there's so much of it goes on. I think what a lot of us, as we've changed chalk brand, we all went from using the green triangle that we'd all used forever to using this Towham chalk, which has progressed through the generations now. But one thing we did learn was you had to put more Towham chalk on.
Right.
And I think we, you know, probably see more people chalking their tip than you ever did before. That's a technical thing to make sure we get the chalk on. But now we've gone through to like, we're on V10 now. I mean, I still use the Towham Soft in the gold wrapper. Not for any other reason other than I like the gold wrapper. Just like the look of it.
It's about a fiver every time you chalk your queue with that stuff as well, isn't it? It's not cheap.
There's absolutely no technical reason of it that I've got it here. But I've got a big box of it here in my room. Just got some there. Look, I know this is an audio service, but Phil, you can see I've shown you.
Okay, yeah. It does look fancy in gold, doesn't it? It's got to be said. Honestly, you like it because it's gold. That's wonderful.
I like it because it's in a gold wrapper. There are deep reasons, deep technical reasons why we all made the switch to Towham. Mine was because I like the gold wrapper.
There you go. Technical, highly technical. Okay, right now, you butchered this name last time, so I'm going to give it a go. Japheth Unadcat. I really hope I've done that right because last time Sean called you Thundercat on Instagram. Has Sean ever, this is technical. Has Sean ever tried to use a larger tip or titanium ferrule? He uses an 8.75mm tip, do you?
It's very close, yeah. It's very close.
Which means it's easier to impart unwanted side spin if you don't strike it in the centre. Now, that is technical. Have you ever tried a larger tip or a titanium ferrule?
Well, it is technical. It's also slightly incorrect. So, you know, I have to just step in a little bit here. It's easier to get more spin with a smaller tip. It's a bit like anyone who plays golf to a good level will understand. If you play with bladed clubs rather than the cavity backs, it's easier to shape the ball. You can keep the ball lower, higher, move it through the air. And a snooker tip is the same. With a small tip, anything 9mm or under, you get more spin for less effort. But you have to be more accurate. The sentence at the end there where he says it's easier to impart unwanted side if you don't strike it in the centre. Well, that's nothing to do with the size of your tip. Because no matter how big the tip is, it's still the same surface area of that tip which strikes the ball.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, the tip size, because the tip's curved to match the curvature of the cue ball.
Okay. Oh, right, so, okay, yeah, I get that.
There was a myth back in the late 80s, 90s that a bigger tip would help you hit the middle of the cue. Complete rubbish. So, bad technique is what leads to unintentional side spin, not the size of the tip. But the size of the tip does directly affect how much spin you get for your buck.
There you go. Titanium ferrules, then. I know it's been a hot topic in snooker. Sorry, for anyone that is not a snooker fan listening to this, this is very technical. Titanium ferrule, lots of people have been using them the last couple of years. You?
Never tried one. I've never used one in competitive play. The theory behind them being is of the standard cue, let's say a 9mm tip and a brass ferrule. If you strike the cue ball off centre, you get what we call cue ball deflection, where that cue ball pushes offline and hits the object ball in the wrong place. With a titanium ferrule, there's less mass at the end of the cue, which leads to less cue ball deflection. So an off-centered strike, the cue ball would travel in a more straight line with a titanium ferrule,
okay.
Which, you know, suits some, there but not
you,
everyone.
There you go. So I hope that has answered your question, Mr. Thundercats.
John Boyd from Instagram has said, would you ever like to see a snooker match decided with a points total as opposed to frame scores? Quite interesting, this.
Now, this is interesting, actually, because if you look at most sports, it's a points total, isn't it? You know, football, points total, basketball, points total, rugby, points total. Snooker, like darts and a few other sports, don't. They use frames or sets, tennis. I wonder how different it would be. I mean, it would take...
I have seen it.
It would take some analysis, wouldn't it? So you'd say you play 10 frames and just keep the points total going. It would be interesting to see how many matches would be flipped. You know, if we looked at last season, what percentage of matches would be different if it had been point scoring as opposed to frame scoring? I'd actually be quite interested to see that analysis, because I think that would be interesting. Yeah?
Well, there have been some weird matches that I've been involved in over the years. We've talked about it a couple of times on this pod already tonight. But when I played Graham Dott in the semis of the German Masters a few seasons ago, this is 4 or 5 years ago, got to the semis, I led every stat in the match. I'd scored more points, potted more balls, but crucially scored more points than he had and lost.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it can happen. It can happen very easily. Yeah, yeah. We've seen it. You know, a player get three centuries in a match and lose a match, and you think that's actually really harsh. It would, like I say, it would be interesting if someone out there. I know there are some people out there that love their statistics. If someone wants to do a bit of analysis on it, I'd actually be quite interested in that.
It's actually used quite widely in leagues. You know, if you could travel around the UK and Ireland in league snooker, my old league in Northamptonshire, where I grew up playing and then played again in Manchester, you know, was done on an accumulative points basis. So you all play through the night and you just add up the scores at the end of the night. It makes the player at the end of the night, their frames as important as the player at the start of the night. Used to do a thing on the exhibition shows. I think Ian McCulloch started it, maybe Joe Perry, one of them two, I think, where they'd turn up to play the club for the exhibition of the night, generally 10 frames. And they give the club 500 points head start. And
wow.
It was done on a cumulative basis. So it has been seen, it has been trialled. And there may have even been, back in the old sort of the 80s, 90s days, an event trialled. I'm sure if Barry Hearn had thought of it, he'd have tried it. But yeah, I wouldn't be opposed to it.
Okay, that's interesting then. Well, interesting to see if that ever happens. Right, we're going to have one more question because we are getting short on time. We have got a few. We will hold them over to the next one though. So we'll finish the listener questions with Tony Elias on Facebook. I think this is a good one as well. Is it not time for a dedicated snooker venue? 5,000 seats, training, qualifiers, museum, parking, hotels, etc. Somewhere mid-England. I think this feeds into, as I mentioned earlier, the Crucible question, the Sheffield World Championship question. Is it time for snooker to have a dedicated snooker venue, Sean?
Yes, is the answer.
It is. Yeah, yes is the answer. Sadly, finances probably dictate that the actual answer is no.
I can't remember the specifics of it, and I hope I'm not breaking too many confidences by saying this, but when I sat on the board of WPBSA a few years ago, this was something we were a long way down the road with, particularly with Sheffield City Council, the home of snooker. And there was either a building somewhere or an area of land that the WPBSA were very, very keen to buy and turn into exactly as Tony has described here. You know, which other major sports don't have this?
Yeah.
It's mad that we don't have a a centralized home, either where that's where the offices of WPBSA are. There could be a museum. Roger Lee used to run the Heritage Room at the Crucible Theatre every year. That was phenomenal. All of that memorabilia should be there. All the trophies, the visitors' centre, the qualifiers, a designated venue as described there is something that's been on the cards. Well, ever since I turned professional in 98, it's something I know has been spoken about. I know, having sat through meetings, that WPBSA are very, very keen to do it. I think it just comes down to money at the end of the day. These things aren't cheap, are they?
No, absolutely. And I think it does. I think that's exactly what it is. So is it time for a dedicated snooker venue with all those things? Yes, it is. Will it happen? Probably not in the near future, sadly. But it would be great if it did.
Tony, lend us a fiver.
Lend us 5 million. Yeah, it'd be more than that. That's the problem, isn't it? And that is the problem. I joke 5 million, but it would be more than that. And it's an awful lot of money. And it's not easy just to do that. You know, these things don't appear out of nowhere. So, yes, it is time. Yes, it would be wonderful.
What we need is a Euro Millions benefactor out there who loves snooker.
Wouldn't that be nice?
And just give the game and just do it. If I won the Euro Millions, I'd do it.
If you won the Euro Millions, would you share, Sean, with your podcast co-host?
I'd definitely give you something.
Yeah, and I'd love that half. I'm sure. Yeah. Half a pint, that was, of course. Okay, we'll get some more listener questions in on the next podcast at 147pod across all forms of social media. Only thing left to do, we've not had one for a while, but we also had a rant tonight, so why not? Pointless question, Sean. Would you rather be in jail for a year or lose a year off your life?
Well, there is a strong argument to be made that these are the same thing.
Well, I'll argue they're not. Because with a year in jail, you could learn German. You could learn Chinese. You could learn Mandarin.
So would you choose a year in jail?
Oh, I would take a year in jail. Easily. Over a year off your life.
You wouldn't last 2 days in
jail. Over a year off your life, definitely. Absolutely you would. I don't want to lose a year off my life. A year in jail, you could put that to good use. You could do all sorts of things.
Have you seen The Shawshank Redemption?
Yeah, sorry. Just to be clear, not that kind of jail. Right? I want to go to a nice jail, one of the ones with tellies and things.
The ones where the characters in Goodfellas end up. They do time. That one. But they're playing tennis and making a nice steak in their cell. Yeah. That one.
I want one that's got a lake on the 9th, please. One of those. So, yeah, I'd take a year in jail. What would you take? Go on, what's your answer?
Yeah, do you know, I think you've convinced me. I'll take a year in jail as well.
A year in jail. We both come out, we speak fluent German, happy days, carry on our lives. Okay, there you go. What would you do? a year in jail or lose a year off your life. That was the 147 podcast for this week. Sean, very best of luck over there in Nuremberg.
Thank you very much.
Hope it all goes well. We will all be watching and cheering you on back here, I am sure. If you've enjoyed the podcast, get in touch with us at 147pod. Leave us a review. Do everything else that's on there. We'll be back in a fortnight's time. It's a very goodbye from me.
And a goodbye from me.
Certainly is. Have a great fortnight. Enjoy the European Masters. That was the 147 podcast with Sean Murphy and Phil Seymour. If you enjoyed what you've just listened to, make sure you subscribe, leave us a review, and interact with us across all forms of social media at 147pod. That's all words at 147pod. Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.